This is Frank Collada, and you are listening to Gangland Wire. And if you're ever in Vegas, take the Frank Collada Casino Tour, 702-622-0850. Thank you.
You are listening to Gangland Wire, true stories from the mouths of the men who either committed these crimes, investigated these crimes, or reported on the crimes. Hosted by former Kansas City Police Intelligence Unit Detective Gary Jenkins. Well, welcome all you wiretappers out there. Tonight, this is a special episode I created as an introduction to my special three-part series on the Hole in the Wall Gang. Over the next 3 weeks, I will examine Tony Spilotro and Frank Collada and what was known as the Hole in the Wall Gang in 1970s and 80s Las Vegas. After Frank Collada came into the witness protection program, in exchange for him avoiding prosecution for his past crimes, he must admit to every one of them. He can't hold out on one. If he holds out on one and he gets caught doing that, it could negate the entire agreement with the government. This would probably be described as Frank's biggest score while he was in Chicago. Frank Collada and members of the Pansco gang, you know, Peanuts Pansco, if you are a follower of the Chicago outfit and Chicago crime scene, you've heard of Peanuts Pansco. The Polish Prince, I think Red Womack called him. Somebody gave him a tip that there was a Brinks truck that got themselves in a particularly vulnerable place. And of all places, it was at a Catholic church. And of course, all these guys are Catholic. Frank and other members of this gang had gotten a tip that this truck might carry as much as $200,000, and this was in 1964. They forced their way, wearing ski masks, into the rectory of the Divine Savior Catholic Church in Norridge, which is a northwest suburb of Chicago. And maybe a little bit of, let me get back at the nuns for whacking me on the hands when I was a kid, I don't know. God save them. They tied up the two parish priests and then sat back to wait the Brinks truck. Just for fun, they found the church's Christmas collection, which is the reason that the Brinks truck would even be arriving there. They had already determined that the church was the 47th and the very last stop on the truck's route. When the Brinks truck arrived, it was dark. The truck was manned by two men, a driver and a guard. The guard left the truck and entered the rectory. The driver stayed inside the locked truck, according to procedure, guarding the cache of money they already had. As soon as the driver stepped inside the rectory, one of the gang members clubbed him on the head, took his uniform off. One of the other robbers put it on. He then went outside, knocked on the truck door, and the driver, not really alert at the end of his day, opened the door. He was immediately grabbed, pulled out, hit in the head, and handcuffed. There were six of these guys. They then got in their work cars. A couple of them drove the truck to the West Lawn Cemetery, where they'd stashed another work car. They unloaded the money, taking only the big bills, and drove off. The case would never be solved until Frank Collada talked in 1982 after the Bertha Scaper. By this time, of course, the statute of limitations had run out. In an investigation of records, law enforcement authorities learned that this total take was $285,000. And remember, this was 1964. Collada would tell his debriefers that it took him 8 to 9 hours to count all the money. Of course, don't forget the street tax. They had to give 10% of this at least to the outfit if they don't want to be in big trouble. Of the men that did this Brinks robbery with Frank Collada, he's kind of the last man standing, I believe. A couple of them went in the witness protection program, Mike LaJoy and Joe D'Argento. Frank DeLeggi was found with his throat slashed in the trunk of a car. He was part of a crew that tried to steal that burglarized Tony Accardo's home. That's a whole other story that many of you guys will know. One of the last remaining members of the gang was Jerry Tomachek. He went on to be one of the most prominent top-level jewel thieves in Chicago. He ended up dying of old age and never went in his protection program. So that's the story of Frank Collada and the Peanuts Pansco gang and the biggest score that he had before he got out to Las Vegas. I got a feeling from what I can find out. So just listen a little bit. Listen now to Frank tell all about what it's like going on his mob tour.
Yeah, hello, everyone. It's Frank Collada. I guess you all know about me or know what I did in life. Anyway, at the present time, what I'm doing in life is I have a tour company out here in Las Vegas, Nevada, which I will do 7 days a week, but don't like to do 7 days a week. Very seldom turn away anybody. Tour starts anywhere. It's a mob tour. I call it Casino Mob Tour. Las Vegas Casino Mob Tour. And what you do, what happens on this tour is you will ride with me in my car, my personal vehicle, along with my driver. I have a driver that I will chauffeur use. And I will discuss not all the robberies, but most of the robberies we've done while we were in Las Vegas. It's a 2+ hour tour. And I only accept cash. No credit cards, no checks. We start the tour out at the Peppermill Restaurant, which is located on a 2800 block South Las Vegas Boulevard. This is where I meet all the clients or customers. Now, if it's anything over two, of course I'll get an SUV or a minivan, whatever I could get on a rental basis. But if it's just two people, I put you in my vehicle, which is a brand new vehicle, and it's a luxury car. And as I said previously, I have a driver, and we do this tour. We start out at the Peppermill. There's three locations all around it at one circle, and then we head on down the street to a place that used to be called in my time Villa Diaz, which was owned by Sam Giancana. For all of you that don't know who Sam Giancana is, he had a nickname. We call him Mo. Momo. He was the boss at that time, the acting boss of the Chicago outfit. And Sam was into restaurants, and he purchased this property there. So this is one of the spots that we used to hang at. And from there, we travel on, and I show you where the skim money goes. How much was taken. I already talked a little bit about the skin from the beginning. Then I show you what gate it went in, what it came out of, going on one day and it would come out another day. How lefty used to bring in, drop it off. Then it proceeds and we go to the biggest burglary in Las Vegas history. At least that's what they got it listed as. They call it the most famous robbery in Las Vegas history, which at the time was called Bertha's Home Furnishings. And over there we sit and we park, and I show them the building, and I show them how six of us or seven of us proceeded to rob this place. And then I go on to tell them how we all got busted because of an informant, and I show them the locations where the FBI was, so on and so forth. People really love to hear that. Then when we leave that location, I go to where Lefty Rosenthal's car was blown up. And that place used to be Tony Roma's, called Tony Roma's, a place of rips. Over there I show him the spot where Lefty parked his car. And I go into details about when this happened, how it happened, who I thought was involved in it, how I was contacted by the FBI. And at that particular time, I was in the Witness Protection Program. How I was notified by Dennis Arnley, a former FBI agent. He called me, or he called the Marshals Service. And I was able to talk to Dennis by way of telephone through them. And he asked me several questions who I thought was responsible for that miss on Lefty's life. Then, after we leave that location, we, proceed on and I go to, and I bring up the name of a guy that in the movie they refer to him as Blue, Frankie Blue. Well, there was a kid that we call Frankie Blue. We call his father Stevie Blue. We call his other brother Ronnie Blue. That was a nickname. Their name was Blue Stain. And, the father was,
in the union out there. He had the union, the culinary union. So we had him hooked up. He was our guy. And this kid, Frankie Blue, that came out and was killed by Metro Police, also was a very legitimate guy. In the movie, they had him done as a thief. That's not true. But you know Hollywood. They glamorize things. I bring him to the location where the kid was murdered. And from there, we go to a place I refer to it as the casino house. It sits on a golf course. And in the movie, we call that Lefty Rosenthal's home, which it wasn't. We just used this particular location because it was sitting right on Las Vegas Country Club property. And then I show them where the feds, they were flying a plane, scouting Lefty's house when it ran out of gas and where it went into the pond. I call them ponds. These little ponds on the golf course ran out of gas. I show them that location. We get out of the car and I do pictures with the people by Lefty's supposedly house, which, as I said, wasn't. And we stay there for however long they want to take pictures. Then from there, we go over to the location where I used to own my restaurant called the Upper Crust. This is where my crew guys, we got the label as the Hole in the Wall Gang. And I always said that was a label we didn't want, because when they start printing in the paper, they call us the Hole in the Wall Gang. When we got caught, of course, that was what we wound up being referred to as, the Hole in the Wall Gang. We would never name ourselves anything like that. And I talk about several things that happened in my restaurant. I show them where the FBI used to sit all day long, take pictures. I show them where cameras were found, where transponders were found on cars, so on and et cetera. And there's certain times I bring you over to Tony Splacho's home. As you all know, everybody knows who Tony Splacho was. At this present time, I do have the keys for Tony's house. It's somebody owns it. They don't live in it. They bought it as an investment. But I'm able to go in and out of that house at the present time because it's not for sale. The cost of that is going to be a lot, not much higher than my tour, but it'll be higher. And then we'll be able to do the tour in the house instead of driving. I just go in the house, and then we would have a pizza party in the house. All right, let's say that house is not available. So from the Upper Crust Pizzeria, we do go to a restaurant. It's called Angelina's. It's on Eastern and Trout. So I bring them there, and I show them a location, that location particularly, because the pizza is very good. And this is a spot that Tony and I used to sneak off and talk things over about what's going on as far as the cops, the prosecutors, what we're stealing, how we're doing it. And it was out of earshot of the FBI. They never did know we used to go there. Again, as I said, it's called Angelina's now, but it used to be called the Bootlegger. And then from then we wind up the tour. I bring them back to where they either met me or the hotel that they're staying at. Now, what the cost of my tour is, it's per couple. It's $500 a couple. If it's a single guy and he's by himself, it's $350. If it's only one guy going in that car with me, he's going to pay $350. Now, if it's two separate buddies in the car, I cut him a deal. Be $3.25 apiece. As I said, it's a 2+ hour tour, and you'll have an enjoyable day with me, and I promise to answer all the questions you want to know about organized crime. You got to remember some people. I'm actually the last guy standing. I've been there, and I go back to Tony Arcardo. I was a little too young to know Al Capone was at the time, but I sure did learn about him in my early years. But the people I work for, guys like Tony Arcardo, Sam Giancana, Paul Rico. He was the boss from 1962 to 1972, Paul Rico.
Take the Frank Collada Casino Tour, 702-622-0850. Thank you.
Well, that sounds interesting. I would like to take that myself. One of these days I'll get out there and I'll go ahead and pull the trigger on that and take that tour. Just spending all that time with Frank at a one-on-one or two-on-one. My wife wouldn't go on that. Find somebody else that might want to go out there with me and save a little money. Two of us on the tour. Just spending all that time on one-on-one with Frank would be very enlightening and entertaining. I know it'd be entertaining because I've talked to him several times before at programs out in Las Vegas, and he is full of stories. He has got the stories. Thank God he's got a good memory. If you have a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call the first call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. Don't forget, take a look at my documentary, Gangland Wire. You can get it on Amazon for $1.99 rental, or if you want the DVD, which has three special features, including a interview with Commander Kent Clifford, which you will hear a lot more about in the upcoming three-part series on the Hole in the Wall Gang. Get the DVD. I've got that on my website, www.ganglandwire.com. Got the Kansas City Mob Tour. You can download my app and take a mob tour of Kansas City. I've filled it with pictures, and I have a map for the locations and text. So it's kind of a fun little thing, to inexpensive way to go around Kansas City. A lot cheaper than Frank's tour, trust me on that one. For my last shameless self-promotion here, I have a book, Leaving Vegas, How FBI Wiretaps Ended Mob Domination of Las Vegas Casinos. So get the book, get the movie, get the app. Support the podcast in any way you can. On my shop page, I have a donate button. I'm thinking about doing Venmo. How many of you guys do Venmo? Would there be anybody out there that would give me a buck or so every once in a while on Venmo? Let me know. Respond. Go to my Facebook page, Gangland Wire, my Twitter feed, and contact me and let me know what you think about helping the podcast out with a little Venmo. Well, good night, folks. Well, good night, folks. Well, good night.